Tucked in the Talkeetna Mountains off the Mattsu Valley near Palmer, Hatcher Pass has long been a top winter destination for backcountry and cross-country enthusiasts or folks thumbing their way for runs on 16 Mile. But with the 2020 opening of the area known as Ski Talk, it's also now a great spot for those looking for a groomed downhill skiing or riding experience. Running the show is General Manager Megan Justice. Before joining that team, she spent 3 years operating a camp for Syrian refugees on the border of Turkey and Greece. Join me, guest host Amy Bouchatz, on Outdoor Explorer as we visit Megan at Ski Talk to hear how managing a refugee camp translates to running a ski area, plus what's next for the development of Ski Talk. Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your guest host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm in Hatcher Pass talking to manager Megan Justice about the downhill ski area known as Ski Talk. So Megan, thanks for joining me here at Ski Talk in Hatcher Pass. You and I are sitting in Ski Talk's Ski Patrol office trailer.
Yep.
Here at the base of the mountain. Can you describe where we are? What's outside the window? What are we looking at? Where are we?
Absolutely. We are in the best office in the valley, in my opinion, because I have a great view of the Talkeetnas, of Hatcher Pass, overlooking the valley. But we are sitting in Ski Talk's base area. Ski Talk is Alaska's newest ski area, and we're on track to be the largest nonprofit ski area in the state. We're surrounded by Chair One and a lot of infrastructure to support the ultimate development and build out of Ski Talk.
So what does the chair look like? Talk to us about the lift. What are we seeing?
Absolutely. It's affectionately called a Frankenlift because it's a hybrid of a bunch of different lift manufacturers, but it is a triple chair, which means three people can sit on the chair. It's fixed grip, so it just moves at a constant pace all the way around. It goes up about 300 feet of vertical, which is just, 300 feet of skiable terrain from top to bottom. It's blue, and it's just a great sight to see.
So I have to say one of the best things about Ski Talk is that you often benefit from, and Hatcher Pass in general, you often benefit from an inversion or whatever yes. The Mattsu and Palmer is experiencing.
It's always the opposite.
The opposite. So today, for example, is one of these infamously windy days yeah. in Palmer. It was just blowing a gale at my house in Palmer before I came up here.
Yeah.
The snow was blowing across Trunk Road on my way. I was like navigating drifts. Up here at Hatcher Pass, it is
calm and beautiful, as per usual.
So great. And you often benefit from a temperature inversion as well, right?
We do, yeah. And it's there's a lot of science that goes in behind it. But basically, because the valley is so windy and so cold, that cold air kind of stays down low. And we come up just, 1,000 feet or so. Right inside this valley between Arcos Ridge and the Talkeetnas. And we're just kind of in this little peaceful bubble that we get protected from the wind, we get protected from the cold. And we try to tell people, and I think they're starting to catch on and believe us, but when you're in the valley vortex, come up to Ski Talk to get out of it because we are always dead calm.
Yeah. Not always.
Not always. Yep, you caught me there. Not always, but more often than not, we're dead calm.
There are some times that it is dead calm in the valley, but not up here.
Yep.
And so you do have to check the weather, which of course you have on the Ski Talk webpage, Mountain Report on there. You can pop on there. I notice every morning at 8 a.m. that you're open.
Yep.
You're on there posting the weather, posting the wind speed, and you've got weather stations on the mountain and above the ski area that people can check to see what the temperature is.
Yeah, the National Weather Service has been really generous to us. They actually installed the Frostbite weather station, which is about 1,000 feet above our current ski area, our indoor lease area, just for us, like for the purpose of us having higher up weather monitoring, which is super cool. Really appreciate them doing that.
Yeah. So describe Ski Talk for us. What can visitors find here in terms of services? You talked about the lift, and the capacity there, but talk about the mountain, the runs, amenities. What can people find up here?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Ski Talk is its own unique story. And I think to talk about what we currently have, you kind of have to talk about the little bit of the dream behind it. But it this lease area, which is far more than our current skiable area, it's about 1,100 acres, 1,500 acres, somewhere in there. That whole lease area has been designated as a ski area since the 80s. And it's taken a lot of people a lot of years to get it up and running. Lots of businesses have come in, tried and failed. Finally, this grassroots effort, just like a flyer at Vagabond Blues in Palmer, a couple people rallying and being like, let's just do it, got together and raised the money to put in what we're currently surrounded by. So we have a yurt, which is really rad, where we sell food and drinks and have tickets. We've got the office we're sitting in right now, which is our Ski Patrol admin building. We've got a shop for our cats, which is super cool. And then we're starting to build out like our public facing infrastructure. We got flush toilets this year. I know that was a really big, a big moment for you, for all of us, really.
Listen.
To move beyond the porta jobs we were all very excited about. But yeah, it's the, you know, people come up here and they discover Ski Talk for the first time and they're like, wow, this just feels so local. This just has a great vibe. Like it's very hometown feel. And that's something that we want to keep and capture and keep moving forward. As far as the terrain goes, I always tell people like it's small. I'm not overselling it. Like one day we'll be the largest, you know, nonprofit ski area in the state. But today we're still kind of small. It's only 300 feet of vertical, but it's really diverse terrain. For 300 feet of vertical, you've got all like just a huge amount of diversity with the runs. And so it's really fun.
And lights.
And lights. And so yeah, you can come up after work, after school, get the dark night skiing if that's your jam. It's super awesome.
Yes, and my family and I are pass holders.
Yes,
you indicated that we spend a lot of time up here. We've been coming up here since you opened in 2020, saving us the drive to Anchorage since we are valley dwellers.
Yeah,
and I will say I do appreciate the bathroom.
Everyone does. I try to like talk about it as like just moving on, and I'm like, no, this is a big deal. Like
we
can
deal.
Go inside in the warmth. You're not like fighting the portage.
Hot water in the sinks. I mean, it's
very, a big deal. It's a really big deal.
It was a big upscale, and I don't know if lived is the right term, but it is a dangerous proposition to try to use a port-a-john in ski boots, in ice conditions. Yep. It got dicey there for me a couple times. So,
you know, I think the real heroes of that experience were the parents, though, because you would hear them in there with like their little three-year-olds and they're like rattling around trying to like keep everybody from being gross. And it was like, wow, we gotta upgrade here.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're going to talk today about the future of Ski Talk, what Alaskans and those of us who live in the Valley can get excited about with your expansion, why Ski Talk's succeeding when opening a ski area, as you mentioned, on the Palmer side of Hatcher Pass, stood as an unfulfilled dream for so long. But first, I want to talk about your background. Where are you from and do you ski or ride?
I am from Kodiak. I was born in Sitka, but I was raised in Kodiak. And I am a snowboarder. My dad is a very excellent skier, or was when he was younger. And I did the very typical thing. You have teenagers, so you'll appreciate this. But as I started to, you know, discover alpine recreation, dad was a skier, therefore skiing was not cool. So I needed to be a snowboarder because I needed to be cool. And so I picked up a board, which was pretty funny. He decided to teach me by just taking me to the top and letting me fall my way to the bottom as a kind of a get back of, you know, skiing's not cool. But yes, I am a snowboarder. I have a lot of regrets. I wish that I had learned to ski and could do both. But yeah.
So you don't ski at all right now?
I can pizza for my life like a champ all the way to the bottom. But no, I have no actual skills when it comes to skiing.
Yeah. Well, Kodiak's not exactly a top downhill ski or snowboard destination.
It is not. No.
So did you learn to do this on Kodiak?
No. Family, we would come over to Alyeska in the winters. You know, I was a basketball player, so we were over on the mainland quite often, and we would go for winter breaks to Alyeska, which was great. Kodiak actually does have we have the skeleton remnants of what used to be a ski area out in Anton Larsen Bay. And so growing up, that memory has stuck with me as I'm building this place out, or as I'm working to build this place out, that I remember driving out to Anton and, you know, the sign was still there. The foundations were still there, but there was no ski area. We would just go sled there, which was, you know, it was always like this dream that could have been, but it never was.
Yeah. And sledding, actually, since you mentioned it, was something that was done here at Ski Talk before it was Ski Talk.
Yes.
The borough for a hot second, the Mattsu borough for a hot second said, this is a designated sledding area.
Yeah.
They had the parking lot, and there's, of course, a borough-operated toilet on the one side, and we would come up here, my family, and sled and hit what I have to say was a sneaky yet very dicey little jump at the bottom of this thing. Great run out from a safety perspective across the parking lot, but there were tailbones that were injured in the pursuit of this.
I mean, it's not as much anymore, but last year and the year before, we would have people that would come up and be like, I heard we could sled here, and we were like, unfortunately, no, but you can ski and snowboard now, which is very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So you have a really eclectic job background.
I do.
What did you do before you came here to Ski Talk?
Many things. I, you know, we all know the expression, jack of all trades, master of none. And I feel like that is just the story of my professional background. But I went to university. I did not want, I don't think I wanted to grow up, but I definitely didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. But I had parents that were college advocates. And so I went to university and I remember looking through the course catalog and just being like, I just want to have fun. Like, I just want to, I don't want to go to school. I want to play. And so I found aviation, and I saw aviation as one of the opportunities or one of the courses that the university offered. And I was like, that sounds like I'll be just like in the clouds all day, like flying. Like that would be, that'll be fun. That won't be hard at all. Joke's on me. It's like the hardest major that you could do ever. But I, you know, picked it, and I'm one of those people that once I start something, I can't quit. So yeah, I got a degree in aviation. I got a degree in aeronautics, and then I also got a second degree in aviation maintenance management. So I got my pilot's license, and then I also got my mechanic certification because I wanted to work overseas. And I, yeah, graduated university. I went to work for a government contracting company in Central Virginia, which was just one of the coolest opportunities. It was a, they did everything that you could do in an airplane. Their kind of catchphrase was that we can do it all. We're innovative solutions to aviation. And so I was a air data acquisition pilot for a while. So I flew around and did, you know, LIDAR stuff, but I also did a lot of other things, weird things with planes, like chasing SpaceX and dropping mosquitoes and fruit flies out the back for different, just all kinds of weird stuff, which was super cool. And then I, as I was going about my aviation life, I thought, you know, maybe I'll switch out of the government contracting life and go into the military because they have cool planes and I was, you know, they go fast and all kinds of things. But I had a friend who's a black pilot and was like, hey, if you're going to join the military, like they're going to own you. So go do whatever it is that you wanted to do before joining the military, because you won't be allowed to do it while you're in. And I was like, that's a really good idea. So I, that was in 2016, and I had been paying attention to the Syrian refugee crisis that was going on, in the Middle East and in Southern Europe for a while. And it was really intriguing. I think migration and all of that stuff is really intriguing to me. And I had a friend that had volunteered over there, and they were like, yeah, you can go over, you can volunteer. So I, for 2 weeks, that was my plan. I went over and I volunteered with this organization, just in one, it was the largest refugee camp in Europe at the time. I think it might still be, don't quote me on that. And I just showed up, and it was like, oh, I'll just see what this is about. Like, I'll just come and help for a couple of weeks. And I got there and I fell madly in love with the work. It was just the coolest, like, opportunity that I think that, or maybe not opportunity, but just coolest work. And it just really fit my personality. It was a mixture of crisis and problem solving and all of these dynamics and things. So joke's on me. After 2 weeks, I just stayed, got visas, and then lived there for 3 years doing crisis response. In that camp, and that was a lifetime's worth of stories. Met my husband while I was over there. We got married, probably the cheapest wedding anybody could do on the beach on a Greek island, which was super awesome.
Dreamy.
Right, yeah, got engaged in Santorini, got married on a Greek island, all for like $500 because we were already living there, which is just funny to me now. But yeah, we got married, then we moved to England. I started grad school. I started a degree in international diplomacy and international law, which was really intriguing. And I still really like political science and all of that stuff. But then COVID happened, and who saw that coming? And so we were living in England at the time. COVID broke out, school shut down, everything shut down. And, you know, they told us it was only going to last 2 weeks, right? And
then they told us the rumor.
Right. Yeah. And then it was another 2 weeks. And then it was another 2 weeks. And we were like, we're going to run out of money just living here. So we came back to the States and then ultimately came back to Alaska because that's where I'm from. And my husband had always wanted to live here and got here and kind of tried to figure out what we were going to do, bought a house, got a dog. And then this opportunity came available. And yeah, it was just funny. I was like, I've never worked in the ski industry, but I've managed a lot of nonprofits in my life. And so I applied and they were like, yeah, we need somebody to manage the nonprofit. And so it has been just kind of a dream job since I got here.
Yeah.
So.
Where was the refugee camp?
It was on the border of Greece and Turkey on a little island called Lesbos, about 4 kilometers, like a mile, almost 2 miles off the Turkish coast. Mm-hmm. So driving on a clear day, you could see Turkey. And it was one of the most popular crossing routes for the refugee crisis at the time.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we all remember images of the boats and the refugees and all of those things. Is this what you're seeing on a day-to-day basis there?
Yeah. So I came right after like the peak of the crisis. So 2015 was like the 10,000 arrivals per day, you know, 20,000 arrivals per day. But at that time, the EU-Turkey deal hadn't been established. And so it was purely transitional. Like people were allowed to arrive in anywhere in Europe and they could just migrate throughout the Schengen zone across the EU wherever they pleased. So nobody was staying on the island. They were arriving and just moving right along, getting on a ferry and heading out. So it was very much like just rescuing people out of the water, like keeping people warm and dry, but like sending them on their way. Mm-hmm. And then I should look this up before we started this because I knew we were going to talk about it. It was in 2016. I don't remember. I think it was summer of 2016. The EU and Turkey signed the EU-Turkey deal. And it basically had a lot of elements to that agreement, but one of it was like, you know, Turkey was going to do more of an effort to stop crossings. And then wherever a migrant landed, they had to first apply for asylum in that country. They couldn't just go from Greece to Germany or France or wherever they wanted to go. They had to apply for asylum in Germany or in Italy or in Spain. Which overnight, which was right around the time that I arrived, basically turned these transition camps into like permanent housing camps overnight. And so we were inundated with like thousands and thousands of refugees needing a place to sleep, you know, all of that stuff overnight. And that was what our job was in the camp. We were what was called shelter allocation in the crisis response world. But we would basically take the incoming arrivals and we would house them. And house is not the word, but it, you know, we'd put them in tents or assign them living locations, and then we'd keep track of where they were in the camps for, you know, various data reasons and
I imagine that the toughest day on a ski area, I mean, there's stuff out of your control here, right?
Yeah,
like
sure,
the weather, the snowpack.
Yeah.
There's stuff that you can work to mitigate, but is not in your control, like shipping delays or equipment breakdowns or all of these things. Okay, so there's stress, right? But I imagine that anything here feels sizably less urgent than a refugee camp. So how does running a refugee camp translate to or compare to running a ski area? Like,
there's shockingly a lot of crossover sometimes, but yeah, you're absolutely right. Like it definitely does put it all into perspective. You know, I had to learn coming back to the States. They talk about culture shock and all of these things, but coming back to the States, it was like, oh my gosh, like these are not problems. Like nobody is dying. Nobody is at risk, you know, all the things.
Washing up on the shore.
Right. Yeah. Like you're not tracking down kids, all the things. And so yeah, it definitely does put it in perspective. And I think I, as an individual, naturally am pretty level-headed. And then on top of that, all of my experiences have really just like, you know, given me that ability to breathe through just about anything. But there is a lot of crossover. You know, we do emergency response here. We do, you know, we treat patients, we respond if the lift breaks, we do critical incidents, we do a lot of things like that here. So I, you know, as apart from the greater nonprofit management, which is just all the business administration stuff, which is a direct crossover to what I was doing previously, because it was also a nonprofit.
Right, and Sea Talk, we haven't mentioned this yet, but Sea Talk is a nonprofit.
Yeah, and so there is a lot of crossover with that. The old, you know, the organization I used to work for, and even when I was in aviation, I worked with nonprofits. And so all of that is a direct crossover, like that business administration side. But beyond that, like the critical incident and just the greater management of people responding to things that are either good or bad, there's a lot of crossover there that I've been able to, hopefully been able to kind of like teach and instill that, like, we don't have emergencies, we respond to emergencies. Like, we don't have crisis, we respond to crisis. Like, those kind of mindsets and translate them down to the staff a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've spent, like we kind of talked about earlier, quite a lot of time up here with my kids and myself snowboarding or skiing. Stuff goes wrong on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. Supplies don't come in. I don't think I've ever seen you ruffled. And like, yeah. I see you operate, I think, man, this chick is one cool cucumber. And I got to think that is just a matter of perspective. Of course, I have a lot of experience dealing with military folks, and my spouse is in the military. And that's been my lifestyle for a long time. So I understand that mindset, but it's been really interesting watching you translate that skill to here.
Yeah, it's been fun. I think a little bit of it is personality, and then a lot of it is like just learned from experiences. Yeah. But it is, you know, pretty, I don't know that I've ever actually gotten that. We had the lift shut down a few weeks ago, and I was talking to one of my staff members, and I was a little bit more serious than I am on a general day to day. And I was like, hey, just so you know, like, I'm not yelling at you. Like, I'm serious. Like, we're just trying to move through things. And they were like, no, we'd know if you were yelling at us. And I was like, yeah, you would. I don't know that you ever will experience it. There's no reason to yell at you, but you would know.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about how there are some challenges here. In the years before you started working here, there was that anticipated opening in 2019, 2020. People might have remembered a lot of buzz about that. And of course, that sort of fell apart because the lift didn't arrive and you can't have a ski area with a lift unless the lift is here. There was manufacturing delays caused by flooding at the facility in the lower 48. And so, I mean, that's just one example. Stuff happened. So what are some of the most recent challenges up here and how are you working through them?
Recent challenges. Kind of stepping back a little bit, I'll answer that question. But, you know, we talk about like the stresses of Ski Talk, or like, you know, people that the lift was supposed to come and then it got derailed and then the bullwheel broke and then this and this and this and this and this. And I think what approach that I have tried to take with the ski area to keep it just consistent and calm and all of that stuff is expectation management, especially with the public. Like, you know, we are working to provide this service. Will it be in? Hopefully, but I don't, like, we won't say for sure. Like, we want to manage those expectations appropriately. I think the most recent one, we have been working on installing a bus road all, you know, for the past few years, working with DNR to get the lease through, working with engineers and contractors and all of these things. And one challenge that is broadly applied to the whole organization and anybody who's trying to develop anything right now is you can set a budget in this year, but then if construction doesn't happen for two or three more years, the budget that you set 3 years ago is now up by 30% and inflation is real and all of these things. And so these multi-year projects like the bus road, we're encountering significant amounts of like, oh, actually we need to change the figure, and oh, actually we need to adjust this thing. And so, you know, we talk about, we do want to get a bus road in. We are planning to put a bus road in. We are working very hard. You know, I hope it goes in this summer. That's our goal. That's what we're working towards. You know, that's what we want to do. But there's a lot of details that affect them. Like, it's compounding details where one thing will change, which affects the whole chain. Not insurmountable and not something that you throw your hands up at, but definitely something that you manage your expectations for, of like, yes, we want a bus road. These are the steps we have to go through to get it. Yeah. I can't just pull it out of thin air and make it happen.
And for those who aren't familiar with Ski Talk, the bus road's needed. Why?
Much needed. So our current access road, I think, is 12% grade, so really, really steep. And the Matsu Borough, in their great wisdom, does not allow their school buses to travel at grades greater than 8%, which is good because those school buses are real tippy. But right now we can't have school buses access our parking lot, which is significantly limiting to all of the programs we could be running with the school district right now, because they have to rent vans and all of these things. It's just, it's much more difficult. And so we want to put in the bus road so that those school buses can get up here so that we can start working with all of the after school programs and things like that.
Yeah. One of the things you've introduced this year was new runs higher on the mountain. You mentioned a limited amount of vert right now, but you do have higher runs. They can be accessed by folks who want to earn their turns by skinning up, or you have started offering snowcat tours, which are small groups and heated and very nice sounding. Those runs were put in to support the Arctic Winter Games.
They were.
And the Arctic Winter Games, for those who don't know, is coming to the Mat-Su the week of March 10th. The Arctic Games is an Olympic style competition week of sport that includes about 20 sports from nations across the circumpolar north. What sports is Ski Talk hosting, and what does it mean from an opportunity perspective for Ski Talk to be a part of that?
Well, I advocated for basketball, but they were not
at your ski area.
Throw in some hoops, we'll have a great time. No, we are going to do the downhill alpine event, so skiing and snowboarding events, not cross-country, downhill skiing, snowboarding events, and we're going to do all kinds of, you know, giant slalom, rail jam, border cross, all kinds. I've yet, I think, to list them all correctly, because we're doing so many and I forget. But yeah, that, you know, the Arctic Winter Games has been a multi-year process of, you know, trying to figure out exactly how we're going to pull this off. And I remember 2 years ago, when I was sitting in a meeting in the basement of a borough building talking to what was then the Arctic Winter Games board, and I think most of them have moved on by now. And it was like, hey, maybe we'll get this snowcat. And if we get this snowcat, maybe we could do some of the events on Mid Mountain, and that would decongest the hill, and then the public could be up here skiing and watch it. And it was all very hypothetical. And I remember it was just like a footnote in the conversation. And they were like, yeah. If that happens, we'll talk about it. But for now, we'll just move on. Fast forward 2 years, we now have the snowcat, or the cab snowcat. We have done a significant amount of construction on Mid Mountain, and we're planning to host almost, I think it's half or over half of the events on Mid Mountain, which is just so cool because it has opened up the door for us to be able to operate regularly on Mid Mountain, but it also is going to showcase what our potential is. You know, you mentioned we have the couple runs up there. That next lift, like right now, we have 30 acres of skiable terrain, which is awesome. But we put in one more lift, we open up 500 acres of lift access terrain, and we open up about 1,100 acres with a boot pack. And that's a huge jump. And so to be able to showcase that this year with the CAT, with the Arctic Winter Games, what the potential is super, super cool. Plus that border cross up there, I rode it the other day. It's so cool. So fun. Almost died, but it was fun.
Did you take the CAT up?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take it up quite a bit. Have you taken it up
yet? I have not taken it up. I have not taken it. My husband comes up and earns his turns, though.
Okay.
So he endorses your endorses Mid-Mountain already. But you have groomed and ungroomed.
We do,
runs
yeah.
up there. And you don't restrict people who do want to skin up.
No. Nope. Our backcountry is open as long as our gate is open. You know, normal backcountry rules apply. It's not patrolled or mitigated or anything like that. But we do not want to edge anybody out. We want to maintain our inclusivity as much as possible. Obviously, we are becoming a ski area, and there are natural restrictions that will have to happen. But as
expectation management,
right? But as much as we can, we want to be as inclusive to any kind of user as possible.
Yeah, you used to have a parking fee, actually.
We did.
No more.
Right. It was a pain to enforce. It was a huge. It was not worth it. Absolutely not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned that the ski area, the lower mountain with the lift, will be open during the Winter Games. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I need to do a better job of advertising because I keep getting people asking about it. But yeah, that was a big goal of trying to use Mid Mountain, was that our public could come up, get their turns in, and casually watch the games the whole time. Because it, you know, it's a great mountain, but weirdly enough, it's kind of hard to see all of the things on the mountain from the base area. You know, you can even stand at the top of the lift and not get the full potential of what's up there.
Right. Because unlike somewhere like Hilltop, it is not a long mountain.
No.
The runs are not long.
No.
You know, Hilltop is so flat-ish on the top. If you're a new snowboarder, you probably have noticed that.
Right. Skate for days.
Yeah. And this is, does not have that kind of visibility even from the top of the first hill.
No, it really doesn't. Like I take our board members up there in the cabin cat, because you cannot see what you're advocating for unless you're up there standing on top of the mountain, you know, looking down on it. And then that's really how you see it.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break here. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm talking with Megan Justice, General Manager of the ever-growing downhill ski area, Ski Talk up at Hatcher Pass.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your guest host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm up at Ski Talk in Hatcher Pass talking to General Manager Megan Justice about this downhill ski area.
Megan is originally from Kodiak and found herself back in Alaska in 2020 after spending 3 years managing a refugee camp on the border of Greece and Turkey. So, Megan, we talked about the runs that exist up here now.
Yep.
I know the top question you get from people, and you've already alluded to this a little bit in our earlier conversation, is what is next in terms of heading up the mountain?
Right.
More lifts? What's coming? How do we get to the next peak? What's yep. next? So what is next?
What is next? So I've been trying to find a good way to like describe this to people because it, you know, you lay it out and it doesn't paint well, but we're a nonprofit. We have a board of directors. We have a 12-person board of directors right now. And the board's primary responsibility is, you know, financial fiduciary management and development. And so what the board has been doing up until this year has been building what we have, putting in the lights, putting in the bathroom, putting in the yurt, putting in the rental shop. And it's been, that has been consuming. And now in our, you know, our ski area is broken up into three phases. If we could, you know, do a map over the radio, I could show you, but it just moves up the hill with each consecutive phase. And so phase 1A, the phase that we're currently skiing right now with the lift, is completed. You know, there is really not much else to build with this phase. And so now what the board is doing is the board has transitioned their sites to, okay, now we're building phase 1B. Now we're, you know, we just completed an economic analysis of what that next phase build out will be, because it's a significant jump. You know, our current phase is about a $6 million phase. The next one is 20 to 30 million. And so we, you know, did an economic analysis. Is this going to be viable? Can we prove this at a bank? You know, all of these things. And it is, it's very, you know, if you build it, they will come. That's kind of what the report shows, which is really exciting. And so now it's talking to, you know, banks and other entities that can support the financial build out. And that's what we're working on right now, is sourcing the funding. And that great question I get all the time, when is the next lift going in? I just have always responded with, as soon as you cut me that check, I'm just, just waiting on that $10 million check to come in the mail.
Yeah.
But securing the funding for the next phase is currently what we're working on. And at the same time, we're also, you know, talking to manufacturers of the different products of snowmaking, of lifts, you know, day lodge, surface lift, all of these things, figuring out what is the best product for what we're trying to do next. And just getting all of those ducks in a row so that when we secure that financial package, we're ready to pull the trigger and start moving. I have been telling people for the lift, they're like, when's it going in? Like, when we get the money? When are you getting the money? I don't know, but hopefully within the next 3 to 5 years, we should be ideally skiing Mid-Mountain. That would be the goal.
Where does funding like that come from? If not from the guy who's not cutting you the $10 million check at the window.
That one is definitely, I mean, there's no donor that's just going to sit around and cut a $30 million check. So looking at financing options and things like that, you know, ADA, USDA, Juno just did a revenue sharing agreement with one of their local native corporations. That's a possibility, different things like that. It's all up in the air right now. I can't tell you exactly which, you know, what we're doing is we're exploring every option. So have we picked one? No. But are we exploring them all? Yes. Like,
yeah,
we're figuring out which direction we want to move in.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have a series of lifts. We're looking at one of the peaks that will hopefully go up. If for those of you not sitting here with us right now, which peak is this that we're looking at out there?
We're looking at them both right now, but to our right is 4068. And to our left is Frostbite Ridge, which is the two peaks in our lease area, where everybody wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you alluded to this just a moment ago for some lower mountain amenities.
Yeah.
One of your challenges is snowpack. Certainly not right now. We've had, of course,
a great year.
Yeah. But nonetheless, your opening was early and then back on time again.
Yeah.
Because you had this great snowfall and then womp womp, it rained or wind or some sort of terrible thing.
It was like a Thanksgiving rain, which was very strange.
Right. And it delayed your opening, or rather put it back to what it was supposed to be. So snow is still a challenge.
Yes.
And you don't have snowmaking here now.
We do not. No. Which has been, we've been very fortunate. I think only 1 year we had a late opening as a result of snowpack. We've been very fortunate this year. If you've been watching the ski industry across the United States, it's been abysmal for all of those guys. I feel real bad for them. Alaska has been very fortunate to receive good snow. But yeah, snowmaking is one that we're working on pretty heavily. We've had multiple manufacturers on site getting different quotes and different build out plans and all of these things. And it is something that is needed. We will always need snowmaking. Even as we move further up the mountain, there will be less of a need further up. But for these 30 acres, we will need it. And it's more than just building a base. And I think, like, I talk with people and they're like, well, you can open like we're riding. And it's like, yeah, but I could be doing ski race training on Glacier Bear right now if we had a strong enough base, if we had that snowmaking snow. We could be doing, you know, youth-based competition events in the terrain park or rail jet, things like that, if we had more and stronger snow that snowmaking produces. And so that is kind of our goal with snowmaking, is again with the bus road, to be able to open up those different activities for the youth in the valley.
Because even though we've had this fabulous snow year, no argument there from anybody, there has been times that my family and I have been like, we're not going to ski talk this weekend, it's all skied out.
Right.
And I mean, that still happens, which is kind of incredible given the amount of snow we have. But I'm looking up here right now at the run that's just under the lift, and you can see, you know, not quite bare ground, but not necessarily where you want to be jumping from.
Right. But they do it still, which just cracks me.
Well,
the teenagers will just hit that all the time. And I'm like, oh, your edges. There are definitely run out zones and landing zones around the mountain where it's bare. And you have that with all, I mean, there's spots on Alyeska where it's like you hit dirt if you ride that. And that's pretty typical. But yeah, we do want a stronger base to support all of it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And you also are hopefully going to open a day lodge.
Yes. Yep. That, you know, the bathroom, which we're also excited about, is kind of step one of that. The day lodge will sit just adjacent to the bathroom and be able to provide all the amenities that you would expect. One thing that we do, I never hesitate to mention when we talk about the day lodge, is the push for education. Our mission statement has a very strong piece of education in there. And it's one of our driving forces. I mean, we're sitting here right now and I'm looking out my window at a health class from Houston High School that's up here learning about ski patrol and cold related injuries. So that day lodge will have a significant education piece. We'll have, you know, a small lecture hall and classrooms and things like that. We'll be able to teach outdoor recreation at a higher level. And it's something I'm really excited about with that lodge.
Yeah.
In addition to the restaurant where you can get a glass, you know, beer and all those things.
Yeah. But you do offer beer here. I mean, let's not lie. Yeah. You have beer in the yurt.
It's great. It is great.
So, and some really comfortable outside bonfire area, warming area. So you can grab a beer up here after doing your turns. from the window over there and warm up and then head back out.
Yep.
It's pretty great. So you mentioned this earlier. Ski Talk is not the first downhill area in the pass. Historically, up at Independence Mine, there was a tow rope and Palma lift that closed in the early 1970s. And before that, there was a tow rope at what was known at the time as Little Sitna Lodge, but folks today might know as the Mother Lode Lodge.
Yep.
And that burned to the ground in 2015. It was shuttered and unoccupied at the time, but that was that was a big loss felt by the community. And of course, there's a world of backcountry skiing up here. So
and the cat skiing.
And the cat skiing.
Our cabbed cat was donated from Glacier Cat Skiing Tours, which operated in our lease area back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, yeah. So lots of ways to access downhill here. And there have been various ways to get modern ski areas set up here. What is it about Ski Talk that has led to it being successful and having this beautiful built-out area that we're looking at right now out this window that was not true of the past attempts?
Ooh, you set me up there. The community support, really. I mean, all of the, I don't know if all of them, but most of the other previous investors that tried and failed were out, you know, out of state, out of country, different things like that. They were just kind of coming in and wanting to throw money at it to build it up. And I, you know, couldn't go into the details of why they all failed. I don't know that I've researched them at great length on my own, but our ski area is successful because our community stands behind us and wants us to be successful. And I think that is, as long as we have that, we'll be able to continue to develop. Once, if we ever do something to lose the community's trust, that would be a really bad day for Ski Talk. We exist solely to provide this benefit for our community.
Do you find that most of the people who visit here are in the Valley? From the Valley?
Yeah. From the greater Matsu borough. You know, we get the Talkeetna folks. We get Houston High is here right now. And then we do get our visitors for all the way down to Anchorage and stuff like that. So,
Do you think that, do you get the sense that people don't know that this is here?
Yeah, it blows my mind. But yeah, I work the fair every year, which is a treat. And I still, to this day, like last year, after 4 years of operating, had people from the fair coming up to me and saying, I didn't even know you existed. And I was like, wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah. We've got the Houston High students walking by right now, heading in here for some education stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Ski Talk is, of course, not the only groomed snow sport option in Hatcher Pass. You know, the Matsu Ski Club grooms Archangel Road and Independence Mine area near the Hatcher Pass Lodge for cross-country skiing. The Hatcher Pass Snow Riders Club maintains their snow machine trails, which are fabulous. But it is definitely the most developed footprint. Especially from a modern perspective. I've noticed when the lights are on for night skiing, I can see them from on the way up into here.
Yeah.
So do you get a lot of pushback from people who think that you're somehow sullying a backcountry area? Because Hatcher Pass is treasured for its
very treasured access. And is a great backcountry area and a really awesome, awesome place. It's been a dynamic process to win over the favor of all the user groups, which I think Hatcher Pass historically there's an underlying tone of like multiple different user groups, what we're all trying to accomplish with outdoor recreation and how that can all flow together really nicely. Thankfully, the Hatcher Pass management plan, which was put together, you know, back in the 80s and then recently updated in the 2000s, has a really good plan for how all of those user groups can interface. Now, yes, we, you know, to speak to that concern, yes, we have had a lot of concern from the backcountry users that like, hey, this area is historically backcountry. What are you going to do? Like, can we still access it? All of those things. And we've worked really hard to partner with our backcountry users. We've established a trailhead. We've established a skin track. You know, the backcountry remains open as long as our gate is open for people to continue to recreate. One of the things that we've started to just try to educate people on, and I think it's gone really well, is, you know, Ski Talk's ultimate build out, we'll call it 1,500 acres. The Talkeetnas of Hatcher Pass, 200,000 acres. That's a lot of backcountry area that we're not touching and will never touch, have no plans to ever touch. And so that's been one of our kind of conversation pieces is, look, this area here for the last 40 to 50 years has always been planned to be a ski area. This is where people will come and they will learn the sport of alpine recreation. And it's at the beginning of Hatcher Pass. And then once they learn the sport of alpine recreation, they can move into the backcountry, into the other 200,000 acres, into the Alaska Range, down to the Chugach. You know, there's a lot of backcountry in the state. So from that point, you know, it's a small footprint comparatively to Hatcher Pass. And then on top of that, we are very strategically located. Again, I wish we had maps and I could show you things right now. But when at our ultimate build out, what we've started to try to educate people on is, hey, there's going to be a lot of side country access. So you're going to be able to ultimately, once the build out is complete, you know, potentially have an option of just a one-way lift ticket, much cheaper than if you were to ski all day. One way up and then punch out the side. And now you have quicker and faster access to backcountry that you'd really have to earn as it is right now. And so it also opens up more backcountry in that sense. So, you know, it's been a dynamic process, but overall, like anybody who truly loves outdoor recreation and wants to see more people outdoor recreate can understand that by Ski Talk being here, more people will learn how to recreate safely in the outdoors, and it just makes everybody better.
You also, of course, still have the option to go up to 16 Mile, mm-hmm. up the road from here, and do the old thumb up to the top.
Never touch the road run.
Yeah. Do the old thumb up the road to the top and then ride or ski back down again. Yeah. You know, that's still an option for anybody who wants to do that. By having a groomed run here, you are also offering the opportunity for doing this in a spot that has some avalanche control.
Yes. Yeah, we'll be doing avalanche mitigation. And, you know, Hatcher Pass is amazing. True, like one of the most beautiful places in the state. However, we are known for our Hatcher Pass flat light. And there are days where it is just white on white on white, no matter where you're looking. And so to have the option to come up and have, you know, well-marked trails gladed out and you can just ski in those adverse conditions versus going out into the backcountry, getting lost, getting turned upside down, all of those things. Like, that is a nice option for people on those super flat light days.
Yeah, and they do happen. I was up at Hatcher Pass Road going up to Summit Lake doing a snowshoe run just a few weeks ago, and you could not see where the road stopped and the gully started. Yeah. And even all the way down to the parking area, it looked like one big flat area, which of course I knew yeah. was not true because I just hiked up it.
Yeah.
But I mean, talk about flat light out there. You know?
Yeah, it's like going around a snow globe some days.
And the avalanche risk up here is real. Even mm-hmm. just a few years ago on those infamous, I think Valentine's Day
yep.
Avalanches that we had, one of those was just across the street from the driveway area that yeah. blocked the entirety of the road up Hatcher Pass. You were still open because it was not in front of the driveway.
Right. Yeah. You know, our area right now is a pretty low risk Abbey zone, you know, in that great storm cycle that we had a couple of years ago. Again, we were pretty unaffected, but that does come into play as we talk about backcountry users and things like that, you know, and it's something that I think people are starting to grasp of like, oh, okay. But when we start doing mitigation up there, we will need to know that area is clear. Like, we don't want to shoot a howitzer at a backcountry user because we didn't know they were there. So there will need to be some natural restrictions. And as I talk to the backcountry users, you know, and they're like, oh, please don't shut it down. I'm like, what if you were pulling the trigger? Would you want to know it was clear? And they were yeah. like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Like, as somebody who is, you know, you're performing mitigation, you don't want to drop snow on someone's head because you didn't know they were there. And so those restrictions will come into play for the greater function of a safe ski area, not because we're trying to shut down everybody's access.
Yeah. Yeah. So Hilltop and Arctic Valley both have offerings outside of ski season. You know, Hilltop has the mountain bike mm-hmm. area. Arctic Valley rents out the chalet yeah. and of course has great hiking. What is the future for Ski Talk in the summer months?
That is a great discussion right now. And I don't know that I can really give you a clear path forward. You know, it's in our mission statement to be year-round recreation, outdoor recreation. And what we're moving into right now, you know, we put in the two lower bike trails and we put in the footpath up to Mid Mountain. And so right now, just trying to open up just general alpine access to people. You know, if you try to park at Hatcher in the summer, you know that you have to like get here and like, you know, fight people off with canes to like get a spot.
Certainly up at Archangel.
Yeah, yeah. Archangel Summit. Yeah. There's not a lot of parking in Hatcher and we have a 250 car lot. And so trying to open up just access to the Alpine in the coming summers is one of our big goals. And, you know, it's hard for us. We want to be open in the summer, but at the same time, every single summer we've been doing construction because something new has been being added, which is awesome, but it does restrict our access to that point. But yeah, we will have the Alpine access open in the summer. And then on top of that, you know, community development is something that's really important to us. So we have the stage and we have, you know, kind of this base area footprint. So we do a lot of, you know, we did fundraisers for the Mat-Su Valley Recycling and different concerts and events for people to just get out. And I mean, it's a really cool venue. If you've been here in the summer, you're outdoors, you're surrounded by the mountains, you're listening to great music, eating delicious, you know, fish tacos from the food truck and just hanging out with your community. So that's definitely something we want to promote as well.
Yeah. And you are going to have a new trail at some point mm-hmm. that leads from here to Government Peak.
Yeah. And out to 16 Mile, the Alaska Long Trail. Yep. I'm, you know, working with those guys quite a bit as we're all trying to secure the funding for that. But that long trail is going to go, yeah, from to the south of us, from Government Peak across, directly across our lease area, just pretty much cutting it in half, and then out to 16 Mile. And that's going to be a huge asset for us. But then also it strategically aligns right where the unload area of Lift 2 is going to go. So for that mountain bike access, that's going to be really awesome. You know, the last meeting I was sitting in, we were talking about just adaptive biking access and what that would look like if we had a lift to actually get people up the hill who are adaptive bikers and things like that, so that they can be able to move and traverse along that path.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah. Well, I say as a mountain runner, I'm stoked.
Yeah. Same.
To be able to get from Government Peak down, you know, into further into the pass without being on the road. Cause right. If you've ever come up into Hatcher Pass on a summer day and seeing folks running on the road or cycling on the road,
it's so sketchy.
It is so sketchy. And I can say, as a person who is running or cycling on the road, it feels very sketchy as well. It really feels like you're taking your life into your hot little hands.
Yeah.
So don't, you know, want to have options for being up here and not encountering drivers as a pedestrian.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about pricing. How do you anticipate those going up over time?
Certainly.
As you continue to expand.
One of our core principles is to be affordable and accessible to people no matter their economic status. Now, that being said, I also have 34 staff members who are great, who need to make a livable wage. So there's that balance, especially in the outdoor industry where people are, you know, typically underpaid for the work that they do. Our goal is to try to subsidize our pass prices with other opportunities that we could do, you know, potentially in the summer or, you know, with other user groups or people, you know, kind of coming in and helping out with that pass price. But our goal is never to try to make a significant, and the ski industry as a whole, you don't really make a significant amount of income off of your day passes. You make it off of your food and beverage or your rentals or your lessons or all of these other things that you're doing. And so for us, we want to remain affordable. It's really unfortunate, you know, you try to go skiing in the lower 48 and it's like, you gotta take out a loan to pay for your day pass. And so for us, it's really important that we keep outdoor recreation, which is what we're here for, the mental and physical health benefits of that, as accessible to people as possible while also paying our bills and while also paying our staff and all of those things. So it is a unique balancing act, but it's not lost on anyone's brain. It's not something that we forget about, that we want to be affordable. It's just the strategy of how to do it best.
Yeah. And I imagine as a nonprofit ski area, that's a core principle as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier a little bit, but rentals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We offer rentals. We have a small to medium sized fleet of rentals, which has been great because even this season, I was having a conversation with somebody and they were like, yeah, we rented all last year. And this year we bought our own gear and now we're up here and we're skiing. And so it really provides that open door for people who are like, I don't really know if this is for me. And it's like, just come rent some skis for the day and see if you like it. Take a lesson. Yeah. See if you like it.
Your ski school, SKEE school, because ski talk.
Ski you soon.
The puns go on. Your ski school often offers ski lessons, but also snowboarding lessons. Yeah. What's the availability like on those and how does somebody take advantage of that?
Oh, it's competitive. It's real competitive. We never have enough instructors. And right now we're currently about a third of the way funded for our surface lift, which is going to be really awesome. when we get that put in.
And for people who don't know what that is, it's like a magic carpet?
Yeah, think like the moving walkway at the airport, but imagine that on a ski hill. And so, you know, once we put that in, we'll be able to offer better lessons for the people that are taking lessons, but we'll also be able to open the door for adaptive lessons, which right now we cannot do because somebody who's just learning how to adaptive ski would have to get on the lift right out the gate, and that's pretty risky. But yeah, our ski and snowboard lessons are available. You can book them online. They are competitive. I know you've fought the fight for sure with you and your family, but it's something that we're going to continue to try to open up. One of the unique challenges that we have is because skiing and snowboarding is so new to the Valley, the professionals that can work in that industry, there aren't a lot of them. People don't have their, you know, PSIA level one certifications to instruct because it's so new to the Valley. And so that's been a unique challenge that we've been trying to get certification clinics and things like that to get more people certified to be able to provide that recreation or that education.
And then once you're able to do that, you can perhaps open it up to school groups and that kind
of thing. We've been working with the Kinnick tribe, and I think we're opening it up to CITC this year as well, and so trying to get those larger user groups in to learn as part of your school, just learn how to ski and snowboard as part of school. How awesome is that?
Maybe the Valley schools will eventually have downhill ski teams and
exactly,
that kind of thing. That's stuff that's more common in Anchorage.
Yeah, and that's, you know, coming back to that bus road, definitely why we need that for sure.
Yeah.
One of the unique things that we've been able to open up this year with our ski school, which is really just like our mountain education center, is the Backcountry 101 courses. And we've been able to partner with the schools as well, like Matsu Central and things like that, where the students can actually get credit for taking those courses. And it's been a really cool opportunity.
And a junior patrol?
Yep. We have the junior ski patrol days as well. So they, you know, the little 8-year-olds can come and stab the snow and learn how to save somebody in an avalanche like a patroller would. And it's super cute. But then we also move into the, you know, 13 to 17-year-old age bracket. And then we opened up this year the Young Adult Patroller Program, which is through the National Ski Patrol, where there's, I think, two of them on our roster, high schoolers, they work alongside our ski patrol and they get their OEC certification or outdoor emergency care. And it's a really unique opportunity where they can start to get trained as a patroller in high school. And then they'll leave me and they'll go off to college and patrol at some other mountain for sure. But it's a unique opportunity for them where they can roll right into patrolling after they graduate.
Yeah. But maybe some of them will come back.
Maybe
you'll grow some of your own ski area people. Before we close, is there anything else you want folks to know about At Your Pass or about Ski Talk?
Man, we've covered a lot. I don't know that there's much left to say except for you don't know how cool it is until you come. And I think that is just, as I talk with people all over the borough and the state, of just like, oh yeah, that sounds really cool. And I'm like, you'll know it's cool when you get up here, because it is cool. It is a really unique experience. And our goal is to introduce people to the mountains. Yeah. So nobody is too beginner to be up here. Find out more information on our website, you know, www.skitalk.com. And our hours this season are Monday, Thursday, Friday, 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then Saturday, Sunday, 10:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Well, Megan, thank you so much for inviting me up here today to talk about your own background. from refugee camp manager and pilot up here to Ski Talk, we really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming on up.
And a big thank you to our Outdoor Explorer producer, Eric Bork. And from all the hosts here at Outdoor Explorer, I'm Amy Bouchatz, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.